I'm Katie, mom to two littles and four angel babies.
And I'm Sarah, an advocate for moms and children of all backgrounds and family types.
With two PhDs between us and collective decades spent unraveling how society shapes women's experiences, we're here to shred the rule books and their relentless tide of expectations. In this safe space, the complexities of motherhood find the candid, unfiltered voice. We're undefining motherhood, one conversation at a time. I'm so excited to be back this week to continue my conversation with Alex Cornsweet about the beautifully unpredictable journey that is motherhood. Today, we're continuing our heart-to-heart from last week, exploring the unique paths we've both navigated through the chaos of raising children after infertility and loss. We're sharing the stories that have shaped us, the unexpected strategies that have supported our families, and the personal discoveries that have helped us learn to embrace our individuality as mothers. From the moments that make us laugh out loud to those that touch the deepest parts of our hearts, join us as we uncover the joys and challenges of finding our authentic selves amidst the whirlwind of motherhood. It's all about embracing your journey, finding your joy, and celebrating the person you're becoming through, but also outside of, everyday motherhood. I came into this interview, I don't want to say underprepared. Like, the great thing about getting to talk with you, Alex, is that I know you really well. So I don't feel like I have to prepare to the level that I would for some interviews. And thank God for it. So we're recording this the weekend before President's Day. And this morning, my husband looked at me and he was like, "Hey, Katie, when am I going to take Jack skiing?" Because snow skiing is my husband's favorite pastime. And he had told me at the beginning of this year, we were talking about how can we make more space in our lives for the things that we love individually, not just together, where we each get our own space. And he had decided that he really wanted to take Jack on a father-son ski trip. And I was like, that's amazing. I would love for you to do that. That's a bonding experience that I would be so grateful for you to get to have.
I'm laughing because I feel like I know what you're about.
Yeah, you know exactly what I'm about to say. So this morning, he looks at the calendar and he says, I think we should just go today. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. You don't have a flight. You don't have a hotel. It's a holiday weekend, which means everything is going to be booked because everyone had the same idea about what to do with a long weekend in February. Like, none of Jack's ski clothes fit. We go every year, but I have someone who's going to give me clothes to borrow for him. And that's in 2 weeks. That's not right now. And he was like, we'll figure it out. And so, you know, he managed booking the trip and making it happen. And I said, okay, while you do that, I will go get Jack some ski clothes and I'll pick him up at school. And, you know, so we're trying to balance what's going on. But I think, like, these moments are so important because while it was very stressful in the moment, while it made today a little bit of hyperdrive for both of us, trying to pull everything together and make this happen, it also, I mean, not only is it creating a special memory for them, but even though John is responsible for one of the children alone for 4 days, that's fine. He can handle that. It feels like a break to me to only have one for 4 days.
Is he going alone with him?
He's going alone with them. Yeah, just the two of them.
Okay.
They're at the airport right now while we're recording. They're about to board a plane. And so I'm also like, you know, while this was crazy and not how my brain likes to work, I would really have loved a few months' notice to prepare everything for this. The reality is, this is actually giving toward John's bandwidth. This is giving him space he needs. It's giving them time together. But also, when he comes home, is he going to be physically tired? Yes. But he is going to be more emotionally available than he would have been because he has gotten to do something he loves and he's gotten to share it with his child. And that's what he really wanted to do.
But also the fact that you guys worked together.
We
to
worked
make
together.
It like, he wasn't just like, oh, I want to go on
figure
this trip
it out, Katie.
And then didn't do anything about it, right?
Like, no.
The fact that
would
that,
never fly.
Like, I know that's not I know that would never. But I feel like there are situations where people feel like, you know, if their partner says something, they just have to kind of make it happen.
Exactly.
Like, it's their job to do that aspect of it. And that's not
exactly
how it should be. Like, it should be, you should be working on things together.
And like, how can you make it work? But what this also makes me think of is like, you know, you and your husband talking about bandwidth at night and like, what's your level? What's your overstimulation level? For me, it's overstimulation is definitely the word. One thing we have started doing at night, and it was our 2-year-old who got us doing it. So because this, I love this example because it's so much more accessible than like a random, hey, I'm going to take my kids skiing for the weekend. Like that's not an everyday experience for anyone on this planet, right? It will be a great mind break for them. But we have our bedtime routines as every family does. And then Branham started asking to dance. And at first it would just be me and her dancing in the bathroom. And then she started asking for it also on nights when John was putting her down. And then she started calling us all up. And then because we were all there, Jack was like, well, can we at least choose a better song than Cocomelon? And so he picked the song. And so now our bedtime routine includes the entire family, including the dog, going upstairs into my kid's bathroom and doing the cha-cha slide. And then everybody brushes teeth. And the first couple times we did it, it was just hilarious. And we were like, we can't believe that we're doing this. But it has become so routine. And what's amazing about that is that I actually find that my levels of overstimulation, and John has said the same thing, are so much lower. Like, we look forward to this part of the day when we get to go dance like idiots in our bathroom with our kids. And then we feel better.
It's actually really interesting. Because my husband literally, so like he always plays really high energy with the kids right before bed. And I think there's this misconception that you need to be really calm and quiet right before bed. And he has just always done this thing where like he always does a lot of physical things with them that I either can't or don't really want to do, like throwing them around. And my kids are all big. Like my 2-year-old weighs 35 pounds.
Wow.
So like, you know, they're healthy, healthy boys.
Yeah, you're tiny. Like, I mean, you're very tall, but you're tiny. So like, you don't want to be like bench pressing the children.
But I love that he plays with them like this because they love it so much. And the sound and joy that is happening when they're playing like this, like the second he walks in, they all like run to the door to say hi. And then they say, you know, spin, spin, or throw, or do all these things. But my husband came home the other night and said that he was reading. I can't remember if he read something or listened to it on a podcast, but he had seen something that said that type of play before bed is actually helps regulate.
Oh, wow. I believe it.
And honestly, probably the adults too. And so he's like, there's a reason why I do this every night. And honestly, I think that they do go to bed feeling really just comfortable because they got to get out this extra energy right before they got to bond with their dad.
Yes.
And I just think it's great because they see me all day. And so and I always kind of back off when he's doing that because then they just get this. I mean, also, I don't want to throw them around, but like, then they get this. It's like that. I don't know if any Bluey's very popular. And so there's a game that Bluey plays called Tickle Crabs, where it's very physical, where like the kid gets wrapped up in a blanket and like thrown over the shoulder. And in that episode, when Bluey says, oh, let's play Tickle Crabs, the mom gets up and goes, okay, bye, and like walks out of the room. And I'm like, yes, I'm that mom.
I am that mom.
Because
I would be too.
They mention it and I leave. But the kids then are playing with my husband and it's just so nice because they're all having a really good time. So I think that's where it's like, finding things like you just said, it can be totally unique and random to your family, but it works and it's fun and it kind of helps break down all of the feelings of the day. And it's just play and the phones are away and you're just playing and it's fun just to play sometimes, right? And I think it's just a wonderful thing to do with your family, especially at the end of the day, and to look forward to it.
Exactly. To have those moments we know we're going to look forward to. And yeah, I've always been a proponent. It depends on your child, right? It goes back to what you said. There's no one way to parent. Some children take a really long time to come down from that stimulation, and they do need a much quieter, softer bedtime routine.
Yeah.
My children have a lot of wiggles to get out.
And it's very kids specific, I think. That's a good point. Like, it's very kids specific.
It is.
My younger two can play, and then just go to bed.
Yes.
Like, they don't need the in-between. My older one likes to play, and then he likes to read a little in his room before with us. Or, you know, actually, he's very into Legos, so we're currently watching Lego movies.
Oh.
Like, literally reels of other people building Legos.
Oh, my God. But, I know.
Like, that's what he likes to watch. But which is fine. He loves it. It's a passion, gives him something to do when we have them. But I think with that, I think it's just like very kid specific and you find what works for you, right?
Exactly. You find what works for you. We've been doing audiobooks as our way of calming because we can do it with the lights off.
That's really nice.
And so it's a good little transition. And so, yeah, it's all about finding what works for you. And especially, you know, that's true for all parents. But then I think, you know, you were talking earlier about parenting after infertility, parenting after loss. One of the things that I feel, I don't want to say, I'm just going to use this word, and I mean, I know some people are going to be mad at me for it. A small gift that I personally have received from that experience is that I think that I personally, and this may not be true for everyone, I am able to enjoy these little moments so much more and live in these moments so much more. And it is because there is still a part of me that always lives in fear. I do still find myself, even with a 6.5-year-old, saying, I mean, you know, when he graduates and goes to college and moves out, all being well, like I'm still caveating, like, hopefully that's what's going to happen. Hopefully this is where life is going to take us. I'm still caveating it. And so while that part, I wish I could just blindly assume that this is my future. I don't personally seem to have that in me, but I do find I'm really able then to get into these good, amazing moments and just feel in my soul, like, this is what I really was not sure I would ever have.
And so that's actually like something I also talk
to
help women with, because I don't think that you need to have the assumption that you will never feel like that.
Right.
Like I don't personally, I think it's not realistic to never have that anxiety or to never have some of those feelings that come with the way that we became parents, right?
It's not realistic with the way that we became parents. And honestly, even for people who came to parenthood very easily.
Yeah.
I mean, just living 100%. In the world we live in, if you watch news cycles and you are even remotely aware of the problems happening in our society, like you cannot live. There is no such thing as parenting without fear or worry. That doesn't exist. What exists is learning to work through that and still find your best self and your best version of yourself and, you know, try your hardest not to pass any of your own baggage and anxieties onto your kids because you know they're going to develop their own.
Well, yes. And so I think part of it for me too is that I help moms see that there is, not only is there not a perfect way to parent, but everybody has their things, right?
Yes.
But it's more about figuring out who your authentic self is and what your authentic motherhood looks like. And I think that when you're saying, oh, I have these small gifts that I got out of it, I think there's absolutely something to that where there are beautiful parts of it. Like no one wishes it on anyone. You wish you didn't have to go through it, but you did go through it. And I think to be able to see some of those positive aspects that you got out of it is important because I strongly believe in embracing every single aspect of your motherhood. And that includes how you became a mom.
Yes.
And so I don't think that you should just try to fix every single aspect of it. But I just feel like finding that authentic self and who you are as a mom individually is very important. And then also finding people and a kind of tribe of people who support you and understand you is important.
This episode is sponsored by Genate by SNP Therapeutics, providing genetics-powered nutrition tailored for every stage of the fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum journeys. Imagine a world where mothers have more control over their health and their baby's development. where maternal health isn't just a hashtag, it's something that really matters. This is the dream GNAT is turning into a reality. Through personalized nutrition insights, GNAT helped me learn exactly how my body processes and struggles to process different essential vitamins and nutrients. Their focus is on the nutrients that are most essential for babies' cognitive development, making them a dream for moms who are trying to conceive, pregnant, or nursing. And they didn't stop there. They gave me personalized recommendations for how to adjust my daily intakes, and their new prenatal vitamin adjusts to the needs they see most often in moms. Their approach isn't just about supplements or tests. It's about understanding and nurturing our unique bodies during some of life's most crucial phases. GNAT gives me hope for a future where every mother can feel empowered and supported in her healthcare. Check them out at undefiningmotherhood.com/GNAT and use code undefiningmotherhood10 for 10% off. So when you talk about your authentic self as a mom, can you break that down for me a little more? What does that look like? What does that mean?
So when I'm talking to someone else, so for example, like, your journey to motherhood was unique yes. to yourself, right? No matter who, like, even if you went through infertility, and even if we're talking, like, I went through infertility, I went through loss, you went through loss, we both went through loss, right? But our experiences with that loss and how everything transpired are unique to us.
100%.
And so I work with moms with this to help them see that you can embrace your past, you can see how it influences you as a mom. And it doesn't have to be a negative thing.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be negative. And there are obviously negative aspects of it, right? But for me, something really important that I did not know when I was growing up that I have learned is that there's no such thing as a bad emotion, right?
Yes.
You can be sad, you can be happy, you can be feeling overwhelmed. None of it is bad. And you can be angry. And I talk to my kids about this, my 7-year-old
Me
mainly
too.
Because he's the older one. And like, if he's really upset, I say, like, it's okay to cry. It's okay to be upset. It's not bad. It's not negative.
Yes.
And it's more what you do with those emotions and how you react to them and how you deal with them. That is important.
Yes.
For example, like with him, like with kids, it's like you can be angry, but you can't hit someone. You can't, you know, scream at someone over it. But there are ways to figure out how to deal with that anger in a way that's not going to harm anyone, right?
Yes.
And so, and you can feel angry, but let's figure out a way to deal with that anger without taking it out on the other people
exactly.
around you.
The emotion does not have a value.
Right.
The emotion is neither good nor bad. The reaction, the way that we handle our emotions, it's like I tell people constantly that Daniel Tiger is how I learned to parent. Like that's
how I feel about Bluey.
Oh my God. Yes. And so I can't every single day Branham's 2 and she's a new 2. Like, and when she hit about 2 weeks before she turned 2, boy, did she turn 2. Like that girl, she is, she's there. And every single day I'm singing to her, Branham, stop, stop, stop. It's okay to feel angry, but it's not okay to hurt someone. And like, that's what it is. It's this helping them understand we can feel our emotions, but we are responsible for also how we enact those emotions for the
right.
behavior that ensues and modeling that for them, right? Like, that's the hardest part for me.
And getting help.
Yes.
Like not doing this by yourself, right? And so I think this is something that we've talked about recently, but moms have a hard time asking for help.
Yes.
I think most moms do.
Most moms do. Most women have been conditioned
women.
To not ask for help,
yes.
to not accept help. And so, like, again, go back and listen to those Eve Rodsky episodes, but I know exactly where you're taking this and I'm so glad.
Yes. And I think that, like, you have so much to offer to moms through everything that you offer. And my program is for moms. And I feel like whether you work with Katie or you work with me or you work with someone else, it's about finding something that works for you. But you deserve the help to get through things, and you deserve to invest in yourself.
Yes.
With it. Because I think women don't think they should spend money on themselves because they're spending money on their kids. But I guarantee that, and again, not every relationship obviously is a man and a woman, but I feel like men overall, like if they thought, oh, I think that this would probably be something that would benefit me, I don't think they'd think twice about spending money on it. Or not necessarily, but you know, it's
in a lot of, in more instances, I think that men feel empowered to spend on themselves in a way that women often do not. And so it's like, so when we were talking about the balance of the load in the home, one thing that Eve mentioned to us is she said, you know, in hetero cisgender households, things tend to fall more on the woman. And that does often include, it's interesting because it often includes things like spending power, but it also includes things like bill pay, but not necessarily always even having access to the primary larger accounts and having to then ask for that money. But she said one thing that she sees a lot of in same-sex couples that are female identifying is that most of those couples are often doubling up on duties.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because they both have been trained to believe that they're supposed to anticipate each other's needs and that they're supposed to do all of the things. And I bet we would find the same thing in spending patterns. When there are children involved, women are more likely to spend on the children.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I do. I think it's a conditioning thing because we have been taught, we have been conditioned to believe through society, current society, past and present, like we have a centuries long history of this, to believe that motherhood equals martyrdom. And that simply is not a reality I am willing to believe in. That is part of undefining motherhood at its core, is that there is no definition. But I can tell you, if there were a definition, it would not be martyr. And so, you know, I think where this came from, Alex put this really great post on Instagram the other day, and she was like, I normally don't do these reels where I talk for like a long time. They're normally shorter, which is I just love to talk for a long time. Anyone who's listening can tell.
I usually write. Like I usually have long captions or blog posts, but I don't always talk for like the full 90 seconds. Yeah. But yeah.
I also love the side, like the hashtag rant side of TikTok. Like I just want to watch people talk for 10 minutes straight. That's what I like.
I mean, people do like that. I think for me, like what the reel that you're talking about, like I had this kind of awakening of I've done brand deals and I've worked with very amazing brands. Like the brands that I have worked with have been amazing. I trust them. I never work with one that I wouldn't personally use myself, all of that. But I found that there were brands that were baby brands and toddler brands and kid brands that were telling me like, you don't have enough women following you. You only have 70% of women following you. You don't have 80 or 90% women. So our target audience is the women. And I just thought that's the problem. Like, and so I think with that though, what we're talking about, it's like women are being targeted to buy all the things for their family. Mm-hmm. And then they don't think that they can buy or take care of themselves. Like their last priority a lot of times, and I'm guilty of this, is spending on themselves or doing something for themselves time-wise.
Yes.
That is just for them.
Yes.
That's only for them.
Just for them. And that is such an important thing to do.
Yes, it's so important.
I mean, and it can look so many ways. Like it could mean that you're going to the gym. It could mean that you're going to therapy. It could mean that you're engaging in a creative activity.
Just go for a walk by yourself.
I personally hope you get to do all of those things. But, you know, one thing I said, so yeah, I saw this post of Alex's and she was talking about, you know, this is the problem because what these brands are doing and saying, well, we really only want to target women is we're making them feel more responsible for being the ones who buy the gifts, who do the mental load of gift giving, of making sure their kids have clothes in the current sizes, of turning over the closets. Like by targeting only the women, we're reminding the women of all these tasks that need to be done that we're not reminding the men of. But then what made me start thinking about was what Alex just brought up here of this idea that women also don't feel empowered enough to spend time. This is not just monetary. This is time, energy, money, whatever it is on themselves. And, you know, my example that sort of helped me start to really understand this is our pregnancy planner is an amazing product. It saves parents hundreds of hours of preparation before baby comes. It saves so much stress and overwhelm. And this is not an ad for the planner. It's just like data that I'm putting in front of you.
It's just a fact. That's just what it is.
While I do sell primarily to women, that is my largest sector of people who make purchases of this planner. My marketing cost is one third the cost for a man than it is for a woman. Because, and I know factually why, because they reach out to me and tell me, and it's in the reviews and it's in my email, they say, my wife didn't feel like she could buy this for herself because it felt like an indulgence. And so I bought it for her and it has been game changing. And I'm thinking, this is going to save you so much time and energy and stress. And women don't feel like they can buy it for themselves. And what's interesting,
I think it's so common.
It is so common. And then what's especially interesting is that when I look at the next lowest acquisition cost in terms of marketing for me, it's actually women who are 55 to 65.
It's when they realize that they should put themselves first.
Yep. They're buying for their kids.
Yeah.
They're still buying for their kids.
They're still buying for their kids.
They're still buying for their kids. And so, you know, I've always joked with my mom about this. I've said, I hate shopping with my mom because we go into a million stores and she never buys anything, but she finds so many things that she wants. And she came back to my house recently. She lives in a small town and I live in the city. And so I live in the suburbs, but like, you know, right outside a very large city. Still, 5 minutes and you can be at anything. And so she goes shopping and then she comes back to my house. And I was so excited because she showed up with things.
Yeah.
And they were for her. They weren't for me and they weren't for my kids and they weren't for my nieces. It was like, oh my God, you bought for yourself. Like I think I clapped. I think I like jumped up and down. I was so excited. And it only took retirement, right, to get to the point of saying, okay, maybe now I'm allowed to prioritize myself. And so I think that these kinds of allowances for moms, these kinds of permission slips are things that we just need so desperately to hear. It's okay to care for yourself.
Right. And I think like another aspect of it, at least for me, is that like I work from home part-time, but my husband is the primary financial, I'm losing the word, but
breadwinner.
Like he's the one, I've heard of this before. If I'm the default parent, he is the default provider.
Yes.
Right. And so we both have weight on our shoulders with both of that.
Yes.
But because like, for example, in our situation, because he's the one that's the provider financially, it can make me feel like, and this is not his doing. This is 100% self-imposed.
But it's not self-imposed. It is culturally imposed.
Yeah, it's culturally imposed, but it's not him. He doesn't feel this way. But it took me a while to feel like it's both of our money. Does that make sense, right? So like—
Absolutely.
And like he's like, Alex, it's our family. It's our everything. Everything is ours, right? But I think that it can be hard sometimes because even though I work part-time, I'm also a full-time stay-at-home mom. And I think for stay-at-home moms, there's just always been, and it's 100% cultural. It's gone through decades of issues and, you know, and I feel like people are finally starting to realize it a little bit. But there's this misconception that if you're not technically financially providing for the family, that you feel you can't use the finances as much. You feel like you, and some people literally don't have access to it as much, or you feel like you need to get everything like approved almost as crazy as that sounds. Like, and my husband and I obviously share, like talk about things before we, especially like a big purchase.
Of course.
But in general, there's this like, I feel like the person that's making the money probably doesn't feel like that.
No, but then here's the thing.
And then the person at home is also like, I'm taking care of our kids all day. And I think about like, okay, what are all of the costs that we would have if I wasn't a stay-at-home mom.
Exactly.
Is that what you're going to say?
You live in Southern California, one of the most expensive areas of the country for childcare. So the cost that you are offsetting by staying home with your children is more than many people make as an annual salary. You are home with two children. That is more than most people's salary for having a full-time job.
Even when we had our first son, it was before the pandemic, and I went from working full-time out of the house to part-time in the house so that he didn't have to go to daycare. And it was because the job that I had, this is a long time ago now, but the job that I had before he was born, I worked in bakeries, different life, but I was like a pastry cook, baker, but I literally would have been spending either every single cent I made or more to send him to daycare. And I thought it's just offsetting each other, I'm going to go home. And so that's where it's so crazy, like just the cost of it. And so it's like, that's where I think moms don't give themselves enough credit. And really, it's not just moms. It's the stay-at-home parent.
No one gives them enough credit.
Yeah.
Because like you literally what is happening and this men who have stay-at-home wives are able to climb their own corporate ladders faster off of the unpaid labor that you are doing. And even when we send our children to daycare, while we're paying astronomical amounts of money to have them there, those daycare teachers are some of the lowest paid essential employees that we have. So again, we're still profiting off of very undervalued labor. The assumption that childcare should just be something that is handled when in fact it is extremely undervalued and it is an essential part of our economic system. And so, you know, I think it's really, really important for not just moms, but for everyone to recognize, look, if everybody who takes care of children for zero or too little money just stopped doing it one day, our entire economic system would collapse. If they all went on strike, we would collapse. And I'm not calling for that because I don't want that to happen. Like, kids need to be cared for, but people need to recognize the value of anyone providing that child care.
100%. And I think that's why, like, coming back to what kind of started this part of our conversation, no matter if you're the parent that's at home, the parent going to work, like, there's so many different things. And I feel like there's always these fights between people of what's harder and what's not harder. It's all hard. There's
all
no competition.
Hard. Yes.
It's all hard. And you all deserve support and you all deserve to do something for yourself, right?
That's exactly right. Like, you know, we talk in the infertility and the loss community about there's no grief Olympics. We don't have to compare our grief. It's the same thing for your entire life. It's the same thing in your partnerships. It's just hard. You had a hard day. I had a hard day. Maybe certainly some days one person's was harder than the others. And that's where, you know, your husband's and your system comes into play so beautifully, where you can give your number that night and decide how things are going to be divided. But ultimately, in order for there to be better equality for all of us and for us to model that for our children, we have to know that everyone does hard things and everyone deserves to also experience joy and experience time for themselves. And some people have the ability to do that more than others, but everyone equally deserves it.
And I think that's why also, and I'll just say this again, like I'm sharing that link.
Yes.
It's a free guide.
Free guide. And tell me what's inside this guide.
Right. So it's called 9 Steps to Embracing Your Motherhood. And so it's like a pretty good size, like one page per step. So it's not just like a sentence, right? It's like a little more in depth than that. And it goes into these 9 steps of, I'm basically explaining what my 9-step signature framework is.
Perfect.
And what I've spent so long working on and learning about so that I can provide it to people, but it gives more information. So it's completely free. You just have to download it through that link. And it's a good jumping off point because everybody deserves to have that information and to start to figure out what will work for them to finally feel like they can embrace exactly who they are as a mom.
Absolutely. I love that so much. So that link will be in the show notes. And I will also link Alex's Instagram handle so you can reach out to her anytime you want to. She makes such great content over there at Our Beautiful Surprise.
Thank you.
And it's just been a joy getting to talk to you and see you. Thank you so much for this conversation, Alex.
Thank you so much, Katie. I really appreciate you having me on.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Undefining Motherhood podcast. It's been an honor to share this time with you. Remember, you're not just a listener, you're an essential part of our community. If today's conversation resonated with you, I have three simple requests for how you can help us grow. First, subscribe wherever you listened so you don't miss an episode. Second, we'd love it if you could leave us a review wherever you're listening to this podcast, as that's one of the most important ways we can grow and share our message and community. And finally, we'd love to hear from you. Jump over to Instagram and find us at Undefining Motherhood, where you'll see a post about this week's episode where we can continue the conversation. Thank you for being a part of the Undefining Motherhood community, where together we're making change. Until next time, take care of yourself and each other.